Good afternoon, everyone. Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. I have the minutes of the last meeting of April 4th before us. Is there a motion to approve the minutes? Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Any corrections, additions, or changes? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion to approve the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, there may have been a little bit of confusion about the time of the meeting. I think the posting said 5 o'clock or immediately after session. I did announce on the floor that we were going to meet immediately after session. And I know that with no session tomorrow, and this potentially being the last meeting of the week for some people, that there are some people anxious to get going. And so what I'm looking at doing is trying to take the four bills first here that I believe are all pretty much non-controversial bills. And then by the time we're done with that, we should be at 5 o'clock. And if there's any question regarding the budget resolution, we'll have reached 5, and people should be able to be here, and then we can act on that. So with that, I will first have Chair Kelly come forward. And the chair will move that House File 3067 be referred to the General Register. Welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means, Chair Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And this is a department bill. I think always what we're trying to do is look for efficiencies, and I'm glad that the department has walked through some of their issues. And in that vein, I'll let Mr. Rudin take it from here.
Mr. Rudin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs. I'll just real quickly walk through the bill. Section 1 revises some language regarding the distribution of county state aid highway funds. The legislature last year changed the distribution of those funds, and so this is really just a cleanup provision to match what was done in last year's legislation. Section 2 of the bill changes a bridge report from an annual report to a biennial report. Section 3 amends state law to provide that the Dimmler exemption in law does not apply to people who have a learner's permit for a commercial driver's license, and that's a federal conformity issue. If we don't comply, we can be sanctioned by the Federal Highway Administration. Section 4 of the bill implements a recommendation from the legislative auditor to eliminate computation of equal design lives for pavement. So the department will continue to compare pavement alternatives over an equal number of years, but we will no longer do this specific calculation. Sections 5 through 9 change an effective date for a provision that links overweight truck permits to vehicle registrations for people that have to come both to MnDOT for an overweight permit and go to Department of Public Safety to change their vehicle registration. And then Section 10 of the bill repeals Highway 225 from state statutes, that the department can turn jurisdiction of the highway over to Becker County. That highway is approximately 9 miles long. And you should have a fiscal note which shows a savings to the Trunk Highway Fund of $34,000 in fiscal 17, $49,000 in fiscal 18, and $75,000 in fiscal 19. So that's a brief overview. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Rudin or Chair Kelly? All right. And actually, well, if there are no further questions, I'm going to ask Chair Kelly a different question in a little bit. But if there's no other questions on House File 3067, I'll renew my motion that House File 3067 be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 3067 is referred to the General Register. And Chair Kelly, as long as we've got you up there, we've got another bill on the calendar that was held over from the last meeting. That is House File 1495, authored by Representative Green. And as long as we've got you here, I just wanted to ask you, I understand I was missing at the last meeting. There was some question about whether the funding for the Highway Patrol, the $4.5 million, was a one-time amount, or whether it was supposed to be put into the base. And as long as we've got you here, Chair Kelly, I guess what was the intention as it came out of transportation?
Mr. Chair, members, when we had our discussion in transportation, we were all viewing it as a one-time commitment, and that's the way our committee approved it. Later, we found out from the language that it actually put into the base. So I can tell you from my opinion in our committee is that we were under the understanding that it was a one-time apportionment.
Okay, thank you, Chair Kelly. I know we're going to take up that bill later. I'm not sure. Representative Green is here. All right. Well, if that's the case, Representative Green, why don't you come forward and we'll take your bill. And then as long as we've got Chair Kelly here, if you can stay, Chair Kelly, if there's any other questions about it, then we can have you both here to answer it. Okay. And so at this point, I'll make a motion that the vote by which House File 1495 was referred to the General Register be reconsidered. All in favor of reconsidering the vote on House File 1495, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 1495 shall be reconsidered. And members, there is a amendment, the 1495A1 amendment, but Representative Carlson.
I'm trying to remember, Mr. Chairman, was this referred back from the floor?
Representative Carlson, no, I never signed the report
to
send it to the floor.
Okay.
Right, yeah, no, I wasn't here for the last meeting. The speaker had told me I needed to meet with him, and then I kind of heard after the fact that there was some discussion about whether it should have been one-time funding or permanent funding, and so I just decided to not sign the report so we could get to the bottom of it at this next meeting.
Mr. Chairman, that's what I was wondering, because we would have had to have had a referral back from the floor if you'd signed, but
if that's
the case, we're all right.
Okay. Representative Green, the author of House File 1495, I want to recognize you and welcome you to the committee. This is your bill, and I guess Representative Green, the bill is, at the moment, as it was when it came to the committee with permanent funding. Do you want to make any kind of a statement on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kelly is right, and when the bill did come here, I assumed that it had been amended to be one-time funding. When I first proposed it, it was for ongoing funding, and then there was some discussion, and when we got it through the Transportation Committee, I was under the impression it was one-time funding. When it came here, I don't know how the language got the way that it was, but I was glad to accept it, because I do think that we're going to come back and visit this every year. If the bill before you is what the committee wants, then that's what I'll bring forward.
Okay. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, the comment every year, it's my understanding that the Academy is not convened every year, but it is convened basically on a needs basis when they have enough applicants or the need for enough troopers to warrant a class, and I have no idea what those numbers are, but it's my understanding it's not necessarily every year, but maybe the department or Mr. Kelly could comment, or you, Mr. Green, if Representative Green, if you know.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, the Colonel Langer from the State Troopers is here, and I'm sure he'd be willing to come down and answer that question for you.
Mr. Chairman, that does kind of go to the core then of one time or permanent, if it's convened every year versus on a needs basis whenever you have the need to have a class. But
Mr. Chair?
Excuse me.
Never mind. I was wondering if you were hogging all the treats there, but I see
this is the first one I've gotten, Representative Mahoney.
You should pass something to Representative Albright, though.
They're coming your way, Representative Mahoney. Sir, welcome to the committee. Can you state your name for the record?
Mr. Chair, my name is Matt Langer, and I'm the chief of the State Patrol.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Langer, can you, enlighten us a little bit as to the history of the appropriation for the academies, if they've been not every year in the past, or what the frequency's been? I think that's the question Representative Carlson was asking.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson and members of the committee, we try to have an academy every year. It doesn't always happen that way. In my experience, there's a need for an academy every year. What we'd like to do to maximize the efficiency of having an academy is to plan for an academy every year and have it be of a more consistent size. For instance, for us, it's a lot easier and we think more streamlined and efficient to run an academy of about 30 or 35 cadets than to have perhaps 57, which is what we have right now. So if we miss an academy year, which we've done, I think, three times in about the last 12 years, what that does is it kicks the can down the road for us and just requires us to have a bigger academy 2 years later than to have one every year, because with an agency of about 600 sworn troopers, there's a constant flow of attrition due to retirements and other reasons.
Representative Lagunias.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The governor has set some goals for more people of color and more women, and I know State Patrol is pretty far behind. Is this going to help, having this academy help with that?
Mr. Langer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wiginius, this is consistent with our push to do everything we can to attract the best and brightest candidates, to include people of color and to include women into our ranks. Right now we have about 10% of our workforce, that being troopers, who are female. We think we can do better, and I'd like to do better than that. One of the challenges for us with recruitment, no matter what race or gender we're talking about, is our inability in recent years to be able to say we're having an academy. So we can do the best recruitment known on the planet to be out there recruiting and finding these candidates, but if we don't say we're hiring in 2017, it's no surprise that those candidates find jobs elsewhere and we watch them go to other agencies, which is difficult for us. So to answer your question bluntly, to have rolling academy funding for the foreseeable future allows us to be more methodical in our recruitment approach, and that will help in all facets of recruitment, including diversity recruitment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A1 amendment.
Representative Albright moves the A1 amendment, which is... Representative Albright, can you describe the amendment?
Mr. Chair, on page 1, line 7, what that does to the bill is it actually refines the bill to be a one-time appropriation for the amount set in the bill, and I believe that is in concurrence with what we've heard from Chair Kelly as well as from Representative Green.
Okay. Discussion to the A1 amendment. Representative Cornish.
Well, I approve, I guess, of what we're doing here. Nationally, I would rather have ongoing funding, but maybe a solution would be to have the patrol do a good job of projecting a couple of years ahead of time, and we can give them enough money to go for 2 years of academy. And they would still have to come back when they run out for another one and see us again instead of ongoing, but we could fund it so they could be have some stability so they know they're going to have one every year, so in the future.
Representative Wiginius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We just heard that it would be more efficient to have academies each year, but we also heard that it would be helpful in recruiting people of color and helpful in recruiting women, and we're short in both. And so is it the intention of this amendment to put a roadblock for that kind of recruiting?
Well, Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wiginius, in no way, shape, or form would this, in my opinion, be an impediment. But I think that from a precedent standpoint in the past, the Academy has come back to us with a request based upon the needs as such. And I think that what we're doing with this amendment is just agreeing with the history that has gone on in the past. We certainly respect the work that state troopers do, and in no way does it take away from that or the desire to invite and train those that are people of color or minorities to be a part of that. So just for the record, just to make sure that you're clear on that.
Representative Guinness.
I understand there's no desire, but from the testimony, that is the outcome.
Mr. Langer.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I can make one point, and Representative Green can correct me if I'm wrong, but what this language would do is provide funding for an academy we would still have to justify and have the funds within our regular trunk highway appropriation to fund those new hires. So it maybe there's a little point of confusion there, but this doesn't actually fund additional troopers on an ongoing basis. It gives us the capital necessary to host an academy, and whether we have the funds available to carry 20 in that academy or 30 or 40 is dependent upon the attrition rate that we see with troopers leaving the agency.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Chief Langer. Just one quick question. Is the cost of one academy $4.5 million?
Mr. Langer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, that's what we know based on history, but again, some of it fluctuates depending on the size. And our goal as an agency has been always to run, if we can run a stable academy size and we can kind of predict accurately the succession rate of troopers, that helps us to keep our station staffing stabilized, which is good for our agency, but most importantly, we believe it to be very good for our state.
Just one quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Chief Langer. So how long does an academy session last?
Chief Langer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, it's a good question. The academy itself is 16 weeks currently. We're likely to go to 17 weeks next year so we can fulfill some additional training requirements that we believe are important. But the actual training is 16 weeks. Of course, before the academy, there's a lengthy background, written test, physical test, psychological test, medical test, and then at the end of 16 weeks of the residential academy, then there's 12 weeks of field training. And this bill with the $4.5 million would help offset the cost for all of those functions.
Thank you. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Langley, the question of training, when you say 16 to 17 weeks, brings to mind a discussion actually we had a few years ago with the now Hennepin County Sheriff. He was on this committee. And what kind of credit do you give for a police officer that's been trained and has experience, let's say, that's gone through the program at Hennepin Technical College? You know, we have a brand new training facility up there, state of the art. So if you've gone through that training, do you still have to go through the full 16 or 17 weeks, or do you give credit for that experience either on the job or, in that case, at a college?
Chief Langer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, we don't give credit. Every cadet that comes into the academy is there for 16 weeks. We've done in the past at least twice, I think, a rather expedited academy where we hire only incumbent officers. I think that's worked okay. I don't think it's been seen as a raving success for us for a few different reasons, but our academy process for 16 weeks is very structured, it's very methodical, and we believe it to be very important for the specialized nature of the work that we do. We build upon the skills that other people might gain in other agencies and what they get through skills training, but it'd be difficult for us to insert someone and have them shave off 2 or 3 weeks out of that academy. That would be tough for us. Historically, about half the applicants coming to us have previous experience. The last couple of academies, it's been a little bit lower than half, I think about 30%.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to belabor that point, but I find it rather interesting because when we talk about a state institution like Hennepin Tech, and we have other Alexandria and other training facilities, we're in a sense paying for it twice then. You know, whatever their experience level would be at one of those other facilities, because the state does cover part of the cost. The student, of course, pays tuition. I assume there's no cost to the trainee that goes through the academy. At any rate, I'll just stop there. But we are, in a sense, paying for it twice at some level. I don't know how the training, I guess without seeing the curriculum or something, compares between the academy and a program, let's say, at Alexandria Tech. That's a very large one up at Alexandria. As far as I know, highly thought of. And I think the same is true with the one at Hennepin Tech in Brooklyn Park. But I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Liebling, is your question to the A1 amendment?
Yeah.
All right, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's kind of two parts. I mean, first of all, I think that the language of the bill, just this short sentence, is a little bit confusing in that it talks about additional state patrol troopers. And as I'm listening to the conversation here, you know, this is for the academy, and I don't know, I understand they're additional in that they're new, but I understood from Chief Langley that they're being replaced. So, you know, the sense, from understanding right now what we're talking about, it's that this is needed for the academy on an ongoing basis every year, according to his testimony, to just simply keep up with the number of troopers that we need to have in the state that are, where the ongoing funding is actually in another bucket of funding. So I guess I'd like to ask the question then, why we don't want to have this be ongoing. It seems like the testimony is very clear that the need is ongoing, that there's some certainty that's needed, that the funding would be there every single year. And so given that, I'm not really understanding why the amendment is, why, Representative Albright, you want to limit this to one time and make them come back and do this again. But I do think the language of the bill confuses the issue a bit. If we're really just talking about an academy that's recurring, that we need it every year to replace troopers who leave for whatever reason and keep our full complement of troopers in the state, we need to do this every year, why would we go to the one-time appropriation?
Well, and maybe what I can do, Representative Liebling, I'm not sure if you were here when the conversation started, but just for the history, my understanding is I wasn't here for the last meeting, and I guess there was some confusion when the bill came before the committee about whether it was one-time funding or permanent funding. We've heard that the intention was when it came out of transportation that it was supposed to be for one-time funding, but apparently it was drafted in such a way that it was permanent. And so we earlier heard Chair Kelly of the Transportation Committee say that it had been the will of the Transportation Committee that it be one time, and so Representative Albright's amendment now is to try to conform it back to what he understood was the will of the committee. But maybe what I can do is to have Chair Kelly come forward, and I guess they had a debate about this in the Transportation Committee, I assume, and perhaps he can clarify what the committee's feeling was on why they wanted it to be one time. Chair Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I guess the way I would look at this is the request came to us for one-time funding, and when we had the discussion, the discussion was, that's what the conversation was, that's what the presentation was. I guess, to me, if it was for ongoing funding, we're talking about two different, completely different scenarios there. Now, if we have an ongoing funding, I would suggest that the cost would be less, that there would be less recruits to train. If we wanted ongoing funding, I would suggest that would be a different bill, and it would be different format, and it would be a different request. So here we're looking at what has been done historically. Historically, they've come to us when they want funding for the Trooper Academy with the numbers that they have, and that's where I feel that's where the request had been made. That's where how the presentation came to us, and so that's how we acted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's very helpful.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to thank Representative Albright for bringing this clarifying language. I think it is refreshing that we are seeing a legislature that's coming forward and providing the type of oversight, the type of metering, if you will, of the people's money as we evaluate these programs going forward, rather than just turning the reins over to a branch or a segment of government. No matter how good, trusted, and respected that segment of government is, it's our job as the legislature, it's our job as elected people of the state of Minnesota to look after their money, to look after the programs that they pay for, and to make certain that we are getting the return on the investment as we understood when we made those decisions. Representative Albright, your amendment's right on dead center. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Members, discussion of the bill as amended. Any other discussion? All right. I'll renew my motion then, or make the motion that House File 1495 as amended be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 1495A with the A1 amendment is referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Representative Green and Chair Kelly for working us through this. Next, we'll have Representative Norton's bill. Welcome to the committee, Representative Norton. I'll move that House File 3548 be referred to the General Register. And Representative Norton, there is an amendment. Do you want to explain the bill first, or do you want to do the amendment?
If we could move the amendment, sir.
All right. I'll move the A-16-1036 amendment. Representative Norton, can you describe what the amendment does?
The amendment is just adding some language that was requested by the Department of Human Services. It's clarifying an organization may be terminated, denied, or suspended from enrollment if. So it just clarifies the list underneath it.
All right. Discussion to the 1036 amendment. See no discussion. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. 1036 amendment is adopted. Representative Norton, now, if you could tell us about the bill as amended.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a committee for non-emergency medical transportation that we put in law a number of years ago. It's been working. It's had its ups and downs over the year, but last year we passed a fairly comprehensive non-emergency medical transportation bill. And this year, after having started preparing for implementation, the Department of Human Services and MnDOT felt there needed to be clarification. So the bill is really a clarifying bill. It was a result of the special committee that worked on this for the last, over the interim. It was not controversial at all. The changes that are made, the clarifying languages, are not controversial to anyone in the committee. And so I can have the departments come and explain why they felt the language was necessary, but I think if you look at it, what we did last year is put some things in law, but we didn't explicitly spell out what the department could do as a result of non-compliance with the law, and so they're asking for some language so that it's clear what they can and can't do. And we do have the committee chair from the task force as well as some department representatives here.
Does anybody have any questions for Representative Norton on her bill? Representative Garofalo.
I just wanted to know if Representative Norton's going to quit smoking so she gets rid of that smoker's cough she's got there.
Ooh.
I was just joking.
Never mind.
I just want
to. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Representative Norton. I know when you're on that particular committee, you get a lot of emails and cards thanking you for all of your hard work, and it's a fun committee. It's there's a lot of laughter that goes on, and there's a lot of fun involved. So I know that you're looking for someone to take your spot, and I'm sure someone on this committee would love to take that kind of spot where you get that much time in the spotlight. So good luck finding your replacement on that.
I think, Mr. Chair, that goes to the leadership, and yes, I do wish them great luck.
All right. Well, for all your hard work, seriously.
Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion. All in favor of House File 3548 as amended, being referred to the General Register, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 3548 as amended is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Norton.
Thank you very much.
Representative Moran. Representative Moran, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Chair will move that House File 1346 be referred to the General Register. Representative Moran, can you tell us about your bill?
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. So this is one of these bills that I'm really, really happy to be authoring. So this is a bill that comes from a constituent of mine in my district. It was a young man who had cerebral palsy, and every day he had this routine that he would get up, he would have breakfast, he would go to the store, he would visit his parents, and then he would go to a bridge in my district that goes over I-94. And once he was on, and he was in his wheelchair, and every day, you know, he would go there, and he would stay on the bridge, and he would wave to all the cars as they would go by every day. And at the age of 29, 2 years ago, he passed away. And so his friend Dustin brought this to my attention out of his friendship and out of the loss, that he would like to have that bridge named after the young man, who was John Alleman. So it wants to be named the John Alleman Memorial Bridge. And so his family is really, really, they've been very supportive of this initiative along with Dustin. And it really has no fiscal note. The family is stating that they will raise the money through family, friends, and community will raise the money. I think the fiscal note that it will cost about $1,500. And what I am told is that once they raise the money, that those dollars will go into the trunk highway fund, and then the state will purchase the signage. So I am here to just ask for your support on this bill, and really allow not only the family and the friends of John Alleman to remember him, but also it's a place that the community can go and memorialize John.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Moran, I think this is probably a really good piece of legislation. I'm just wondering, does the bridge currently have a name?
No. Okay. It's an overpass, kind of like an overpass. Right.
And this is a pedestrian bridge, right?
Yes.
Representative Moran, a bike trail kind of bridge?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Other discussion to Representative Moran's bill? Seeing no discussion. All in favor of House File 1346 being referred to the General Register, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 1346 is referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Member.
Thank you, Representative Moran. Well, members, the last item before us then, and probably what many people would consider the main item, is the resolution. The Chair will move the RES-06 resolution, which is the budget resolution underneath House File, House Rule 4.03. And I'll just go through the resolution, members. It allows a maximum limit on net expenditures of $2 million for the fiscal years 16 and 17. And the idea behind that is that this would be sort of the other bills category. And the other items that are on here for the other finance bills net out to zero. So we would have roughly the $900 million surplus that is available divided between the Transportation Committee and the Tax Committee. As members know, those bills passed last year. They're in conference. It doesn't really seem to make any sense to try to set targets for those because they've already passed through this committee and are really a matter for the leaders of the House and Senate to work out in terms of what the targets for those committees would be. So I don't have the tax bill and transportation bill listed as having targets because of that. But otherwise, as we go down through the list, you can see there is a modest adjustments for many of the bills, a negative $1,930,000 for the agriculture finance bill, a negative $3,135,000 in debt service for the capital investment bill, which would allow a $600 million general obligation bonding bill, a limit of zero for the education finance bill, although I understand that there are some other funds that are available that school districts have actually requested that would allow for some other spending there, but it would net at zero. a positive target of $3,900,000 for the Environment and Natural Resources Bill, a limit of zero for the Health and Human Services Finance Bill and the Higher Education Bill, limit of $11,665,000 for the Job Growth and Energy Affordability Finance Bill, a limit of a negative $1 million for the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Bill, and a limit of a negative $9,500,000 for the State Government Finance Bill. And members, in proposing this, I guess the philosophy behind it is we, as you all know, fund state government on a two-year basis. We funded the state for the current fiscal year that we are in and the fiscal year 2017 last year. We had some substantial increases in that biennium and that funding from the previous biennium. And so this budget resolution would allow some reallocation of spending that was done, allow some budget reductions in some committees that would be offset by additional higher spending on some priorities in other committees. But as a net amongst the various budgets would equal zero, which would allow for the roughly $900 million surplus that is available to be available for the Transportation Committee and the Tax Committee, which were the two committees that did not get omnibus bills passed last year. So members, with that, I would be open to discussion and amendments on the RES 06 resolution. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, I was looking at the capital investment that will enable $600 million geobonds.
Yes.
So when we were hearing about capital investment before, we were hearing that it was going to be $800 million, and half would go to transportation and half otherwise. And so just to understand now that it's $600 will it be half transportation and half otherwise, or will it be 400 transportation and 200 otherwise?
Well, I guess, Representative Wagenius, I guess I don't know where you were hearing that from. I know I never said that. The $800 million number came about because that was what was in the budget forecast. And the assumption has been when the Office of Management and Budget puts out the forecast for the last few years that there would be an $800 million bonding bill in the even-numbered years. But, of course, what there actually is subject to what the legislature and then what the governor decide to do. And so that's kind of where the $800 million number came from. It carried forward from last year. I know we didn't think that it made sense to try to change the $800 million assumption last year because we didn't know what the situation would be with the budget and the economy and such this year and until this year. So now that we're here and now that it's time to set the resolution for this year, I guess as we've looked at it, you know, the debt service is the fastest growing major budget area that we have over the last several years. I guess it's my feeling that we should be pulling back a bit from the $800 million. We did spend $180 million roughly in general obligation bonding in the bonding bill last year. So if you added that to the $600 million, we're almost at $800 million. And so that's the reasoning behind why we're at $600 million. And I guess, at least from my standpoint, there's never been an assumption about the division between transportation and other projects. And, you know, what the committee decides to do on this will be subject to Chair Torkelson and the committee. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, if I could follow up. It's been reported that the Speaker has been telling constituencies that it would be divided half transportation and half otherwise. So I'm trying to figure out, does that mean 300 for transportation and 300 otherwise, or 400, since that was the thing we were thinking about, for transportation and 200 otherwise?
Well, Representative Guinness, I actually have not heard the Speaker say that. If he did say that, I guess I don't know when he said it, but it is, as you know, a subject for the Capital Investment Committee, and they all have to decide how they best feel the bill should be divided up. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you. I ask because one of the things that the governor has put in his bonding proposal was quite a bit of money for infrastructure for wastewater treatment and for drinking water. And that is something that helps everyone across the state. And I just wanted to make sure that that wasn't getting lost. And I feel like if there's only $200 or $300 million, that water and drinking water could be minimized, and that's one of my concerns.
Well, thank you, Representative Guineas. I guess I would tell you just personally, I think that's an important area too, and it'll be up to the committee on what they decide to do on it. But if I have any say, certainly I think that's an important area that should get some funding. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand your logic in kind of explaining the blank that we have on the transportation line item. But, you know, from, you know, when I calculate, you know, what you would have, even if you would take just about all of that and put that into transportation, you know, this $900 million, or, you know, some parts of it for tax, some parts of it for transportation, we're still going to be short, you know, on a long-term basis. You know, the parties have agreed. You know, last session we, you know, there was a little fight about, you know, how much do we need for roads and bridges, to fix roads and bridges. And the parties generally agreed, you know, it's around $700 million on an annual basis into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And, you know, I think if you were to sort of do some kind of split between the tax bill and the transportation bill, even hypothetically 50-50, you know, even with the majority's plan to shift from the general fund significant monies into a dedicated fund for transportation. I don't even think you guys have it dedicated, but it's the auto parts sales tax, which I'm warming up to that a little bit. But even if you were to do that and use your one-time general fund money as you envision, we still fall short of the need. And that's my concern. And it's the plan that you have on the table is very short term. It's just one time money from, I think, a very fleeting, temporary surplus. And so, I really hope we can get together on this issue in transportation funding and get something done this session. But you know, this, you know, kind of repeating last year's plan, I just don't think it's going to get us anywhere close to where we need to be. So. I understand the logic of how you put this into the budget resolution, but you know, if we're just going back to House File 4, you know, we're just going to fall short of the revenue that we need for the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And of course, you know, $400 million of that has to go to the Trunk Highway Fund, and that's where we fund the state troopers and all these other things. So, just wanted to comment on that, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Hornstein, I would say that I share your feeling that we need to be putting more money into transportation, and of course those on the conference committee, and I guess we'll have to see what they come up with, but like you, I hope that we can come up with a robust transportation package.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm going back for a moment to follow up on what Representative Arginius was pointing out relative to the capital investment bill at $600 million. You know, that's far below what our debt capacity can handle. The governor, in fact, at I think he was at $1.4 billion, if I recall, was well within the capacity. And so a couple of things I'd like to point out, and we had this debate a year ago when we dealt with capital investment, but I kept saying it was a target of opportunity, and fortunately it's still there because interest rates are still relatively low. And we still have huge infrastructure needs. Met today with Rosenstein from the Minsky system, and he was very concerned about their heaper needs, you know, maintaining our vast investment in that case in our state colleges and universities. But you can go into almost all areas of state government, and we have slipped behind on our infrastructure, and I would say that the $600 million just simply does not recognize that. And we do have important and issues that are now front and center, as Representative Wadgenius pointed out, in terms of water quality. Hugely important issue, an issue that Minnesotans across the state have expressed a lot of concern about. And I just would hope that you reconsider that $600 million, because I think it's far too low when you look at the needs of the state.
Oh, thank you, Representative Carlson. I guess the only thing I would say on it is there's been some discussion about what the debt capacity of the state is, and you know, my recollection is that the way it used to be calculated, you'd look at this, I believe it was like a 3.25% of personal income standard, which if you look at the debt capacity report, says that we have a debt capacity now of $968 million, which is certainly well above the $600 million. And I guess I, you know, personally don't believe that we should necessarily spend as much as we possibly can. I don't think we should necessarily max out the state credit card just because we can. But the Office of Management and Budget has come up with some different views of what the state's debt capacity is in recent years that go beyond what that $968 million number is. And, you know, I guess based on what's been done in the past, it's my view that what the governor is recommending is beyond what we've considered the state's debt capacity in the past. But you're right, Representative Carlson, this proposal is certainly less than our capacity. I have no argument with that.
And Mr. Chairman, the main point I'm trying to make is we know what the need is. And, Mr. Chairman, I think with that $600 million, we're not recognizing what that huge need is across the state of Minnesota. But when I talk about the target of opportunity, it's low interest rates. And we don't know how long those low interest rates are going to remain. I think we had a bit of luck. I argued that point last year, and fortunately they're still somewhat low. When we've gone out to bid, we've gotten some good bids, but how long that will remain, and that determines the number of projects as well, because the interest rates determine the debt service, as we all know. So those are the two points that I'm trying to make is relative to the bonding bill, and basically the same argument that I was making a year ago. I told you at the time it was going to grow, and if you're fortunate enough to get this through the House at $600 million, I suspect it'll grow. It has to grow if we're going to really meet the needs of the state of Minnesota.
Representative Wagenius.
Let me pass for just a minute, because I do want to come back to his argument, but let some other folks talk. But I would like to be recognized.
Representative,
we have a little fairer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just have a couple of questions, maybe. So with the Health and Human Services target of zero, I'm wondering, is there going to be a bill? And we've heard of quite a number of bills this session. In Chair Dean's committee, that are asking to spend lots and lots and lots of money, and that's of course very common for Health and Human Services, where things cost a lot of money. But I'm wondering then if the plan is to have a finance bill that funds some items and tries to find savings in other places. So that's kind of my first question. My second question is whether there's a target for the Healthcare Access Fund, if that's contemplated now, if there is such a target that's going to be brought forward, if the target is zero, since nothing is mentioned here about that.
Representative Liebling, it's certainly my anticipation that there will be a Health and Human Services bill. You know, it's my anticipation that there will be bills for all the finance committees, the 9 finance committees that have been identified on here. I expect there will be some reallocation in the Health and Human Services Committee, and so there will be, you know, some places of savings and then some places of additional spending to equal zero. And there is not, at this time, a target for the Health Care Access Fund. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe this question is for Representative Cornish. I'm looking at the budget target for public safety, and it shows a cut of $1 million. And then I saw there was a press release that said that the funds were going to come out of MNCOR. So the question is, as part of your budget targets, are any other funds subject to people moving them around, or did you place limits on the ability for other committees to raid funds within their jurisdiction, Mr. Chair and Representative Cornish?
Representative Cornish.
The DFL, I think, alerted the news crew today that the money was coming out of MNCOR, so they came down to Representative Hilstrom's room, and then they came to mine. And since the Robert's Rules of Order and Masons don't allow me to call anybody hypocrites or gotcha year politics, I won't do that. So I did that all on TV. So what happened? What happened was I looked through the records and found that in 3 years when the DFL was in charge, they took money from MNCOR for other parts of the budget. In fact, last year there was two amendments to take money from MNCOR from my budget in the Public Safety Committee, and there was five amendments on the floor to take money from MNCOR. So it seems like it's okay to take money from MNCOR when it's you, but not them. So. And then the fire safety account is another dedicated account that we used to balance the budget. Both parties did that freely. So I guess we could, you know, throw grenades back and forth and accuse each other. But that money will probably come back and spent on very good needs for the state of Minnesota and be put to good use.
I guess to your question, Representative Hilstrom, I guess I would say that if your committee finds a different place to come up with $1 million that they think would be better than that, I certainly would be open to that. But I do know there is some money available in the MNCOR account, and I think that was mentioned as one possible place that money could be gotten so that people didn't think we were actually cutting some other program that was funded last year. Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Cornish. I wasn't saying I wasn't a hypocrite. I've taken money from MNCOR, and the question is that all the money that you're limited from taking? So are we going to see other shifts and other gimmicks within the budget, right? So if I can find another $3 million in another fund that's someplace else, are we going to see that added as part of the budget in any of these other places? I just want to make sure I understand the rules, Mr. Chair, as we are preparing to spend or not spend money in this budget, that we know where the parameters for the rules are here, Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Hilstrom, I guess I'm thinking you know the way this works. I mean, committees have the ability to make decisions, and if they think, for example, that perhaps there are savings available in one program because something's occurred in the last year and that program doesn't need as much money as we thought, you know, it's certainly fair game for them to make a decision to take money out of that program. And if they then feel that something has happened where they need to spend more in another area, that's certainly the committee's prerogative to spend more in that other area. This is just the net target that they've got to end up with in the end, and we give the committee's discretion within that to make those other decisions. I trust the committee chairs all know more about their own budgets than I do.
So, Mr. Chair, again, just one last clarification. So that means that you did not give them a target that they can or can't spend in other funds within their jurisdiction? That's just a yes or no question.
Representative Hilstrom, I don't know if I know what you mean by the yes or no. I'll just simply say that, yes, they have jurisdiction or the ability to make decisions regarding other programs and other funds.
Thank you.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just don't want to pass up the opportunity to comment and express my disappointment for the ag finance budget and that the fact that there's going to be a nearly $2 million cut. And I know that there's a lot of talk about, you know, how you can rearrange dollars and maybe reassign some things, but I just have to say that, you know, this year we've spent some time hearing in both ag policy and ag finance a number of really good proposals, and people have come forward earnestly and honestly feeling as though they had a chance at being able to get some things funded. And if that's not the case, I just know that there were a number of people that came forward thinking that maybe there'd be a chance to be able to get something, and there are some very serious issues. We have an Emerald Ash Borer issue coming forward. We have a need in the vet diagnostic lab. We have some other things that are coming forward. So I just needed to make that comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I say, Representative Poppy, I mean, I know there are some other programs that people have wanted there, and I hesitate to say too much with Chair Hamilton not here, but having talked to him about this, it's my understanding that there is some excess money available in some programs that is not needed there that he feels can be canceled without any harm to the state, that those needs can be dealt with in a different way, and that thus there will be some additional money for some of the programs that you're maybe thinking of. Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's kind of deja vu all over again. You know, I looked at the Jobs Committee target, and it seems to be the largest at 11.6, but...
Are you suggesting that you've got an amendment to decrease that?
Increase that or decrease that?
Decrease that.
Oh, I think you'll do just fine without my help, Mr. Chair. But it essentially goes all to broadband. But it doesn't even fill, 10% of the need? It's more closer to 5%. And, you know, if I was a sarcastic legislator, I might, as an urban legislator, say thank you because you're going to keep all the jobs in the urban area, which, you know, that's too bad because I've always been a more broad-based legislator and tried to make most of the things go 50-50. Even your own member, Representative Baker, proposed $35 million, and so it's nice to know that we're not the only ones that are feeling the pain at the moment. But I'm a little shocked and a little saddened by that, because I know that having chaired the Jobs Committee, I know where the money will come from to fill in whatever you're going to fill in, and it is the money that the state uses to help businesses start up here. It is the money that the state uses to train laid-off workers. So your budget really does hurt the continued growth of the state of Minnesota as the star of the North, so to speak. You know, our economic track record has been great. It's because we've invested, and your budget is not going to invest. It's not only not going to invest in greater Minnesota, which was a big campaign theme, I understood, a couple years ago. It's not going to invest in our metros, and it's not going to invest in our workers. This is an amazing budget, and I have no empathy for Representative Garofalo.
Well, Representative Mahoney, I think you'll just have to see what... what we eventually get here. I think that there can be a good budget accomplished with this number.
Good luck.
Representative Guinness.
Well, let me just ask one question. I have two. But the first is, we're talking about $900 million, and I don't think I know the split between one-time and ongoing money, and perhaps Mr. Marks can help us with that.
Mr. Marks, can you comment on that?
Mr. Chair and members, the balance in the current biennium is $900 million. The balance in fiscal 18 and 19, if you take all the carry-forward money out of it and just look at revenues minus projected revenues minus projected spending in 2018-2019 is $1,183,000,000. So it's not so much that... I guess the question is, you can't do 900 twice. That would be $1.8 billion. You can do it a little bit more than once. And doing 900 of spending in fiscal 17. So the problem with it is that a particular program might cost $1 million in fiscal 17. It might be 1.2 million in 18, 1.3 million in 19. So it's kind of hard to say how much of the spending. I mean, basically, it's you could have 1.183 divided by 2 carrying forward for each year of the next biennium. So 900 million in this biennium, but it can't exceed 1.183 billion in the next biennium if the next biennium is going to be balanced.
For Representative Guineas.
Thank you. That's helpful, I think, for all of us to understand, because I think people think there's more money than we have. So we were in capital investment, and I understand your caucus position of wanting to keep your debt service down. I understand that position. But if that is the position you take, then the consequence is we're going to have to spend more cash on things like asset preservation. I mean, that is the obvious consequence. So I'm still coming back to the capital investment budget and seeing that if we spend half of it for transportation at 300, and then we spend some of it for water at the governor's, I think that's 167, and that doesn't include Lincoln Pipestone, that means there's maybe $100 million left for the university and the state college system for asset preservation. So if we can't fund the asset preservation, then that's another kind of deficit spending. So I worry that we're going into two kinds of deficit spending with this particular bill. And that's, I would think that a lot of Minnesotans would share that worry.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. I don't know if any others want to comment from our side of the aisle, and perhaps some on your side of the aisle may want to, but one of the things I want to make sure is we request a roll call vote on the resolution. And but while being that you recognized me, I do have a couple of questions. I'd like to go to education and either ask you, Mr. Chairman, or Representative Loon. One of the bigger numbers that doesn't necessarily appear directly in the budget resolution is the $52 million that's being, I'll use the term recaptured, and I don't necessarily mean that as a negative, but there are 7 school districts that have what's being described as excess funds. And I'm interested in what the rules of the, I think it's $48 million that would remain, or actually a little bit less than that, because you indicated to me earlier that $7 million of the $52 would go to broadband for school districts. But the balance then, and I assume it's kind of voluntary on the part of the school districts, that's what I heard today, as to whether those dollars are surrendered. So I'm just wondering how that's being booked, and if that's being distributed to just those 7 school districts, or across all the school districts in Minnesota, or what, because that is the biggest item literally in the bill that's going to be reallocated. And then I have some follow-up questions as well.
I'll recognize Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Carlson. Just to clarify, there is no recapture from school districts on money. Like, I'm not sure if you're what you're referring to that way. What we actually heard in committee last night, and on a proposal that we would be considering, is that we have a number of districts that are under what's called maximum effort loans. These were loans that the state provided to school districts for building, and generally it's programs changed a bit from back in 1959 when it was created to which school districts are using it, but it's generally right now more rural areas with low adjusted net tax capacity in their area, and so there are 50-year bonds with the state, and generally the interest rates are, I would say, higher than market rate than what you could get by going out and refinancing. So we've done this in the past where we allow an opportunity for these districts to get out from under these loans because they're local property taxpayers, and in many cases it's farmers, are paying this 29.39% tax rate every year on the on these levies. It's very high. Actually, in some one school district in particular, the locals found out that they may have an opportunity to try to get out from under this and created revolt. They voted against a one-day bond issue that the district had done a number of times in a row when they realized that they may be locked into this huge tax rate for 50 years. So if we allow an opportunity for these schools to pay back the principal borrowed on these loans, and I think it's something like the state has already taken in something like $14 million in interest from these school districts, they would be in a much better position to do their own bond locally, probably lower their interest rate, help their local taxpayers. And in doing so, the money that they repay to the state, again, comes in to our finances.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I said I was searching for a term to kind of describe it, whether it's recapture, redistribution, or whatever. This is going to be a block of dollars, and that was my fundamental question. There will be a block of dollars then that will be available to the K-12 Finance Committee, and being that that's the largest number of dollars, I was trying to get some feel for how those dollars then would be distributed within your committee. Or maybe put another way, will there be any instructions from your leadership in terms of how that money is to be used? I'm just trying to get a handle on who's going to benefit from that 40-some-odd million dollars.
Representative Loom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson. Well, no specific direction has been given to me on the expenditure of those funds, other than it sounds like you've had a conversation with Representative Knobloch perhaps about some broadband money, but that would be a fairly small amount of the approximately $52 million we estimate we will have from the repayment of those loans. And we've been hearing a lot of proposals before the committee on some things to help schools and to help school children in Minnesota, so we'll now work on putting together a bill.
Yeah, it was, Mr. Chairman, I hope I'm not talking out of school, but I thought this morning you mentioned that at least $7 million of that would go toward broadband but to be used by school districts.
Yes, that's something that we have talked about, and that's the plan, is that $7 million of that $52 million would be a broadband program for school districts that would be designed by the committee, and there are really no other instructions for the committee that I'm aware of.
And that's what I was searching for, being that there was the one the one tie, how the other $45 million is going to be distributed. Well, the other thing is there's not much spending in here, but are there any tails issues, Mr. Chairman? And any instructions to your committees relative to that? Because you are re-spending, if you will, 15, almost $16 million, if I recall.
Well, Representative Carlson, as you know, we generally don't adopt tails targets as part of a budget resolution, and so we're not adopting those, but we certainly want to keep our tails as low as we can. When you hear what Mr. Marks has talked about in regard to 2018-19 and some of the revisions with the budget forecast, there's certainly, you know, some concerns about not wanting to boost up the tails.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, that I fully recognize, having had the chair that you have, that we don't have them in the budget resolution, but I know that both caucuses have historically sometimes informally given tails targets, and there's not a lot of spending here, but there could conceivably be some tails. One that would probably jump out would be how you're handling the broadband, I suspect, because that will be totaling about $20 million. I assume those are one time. In the budget resolution, you know, you indicated that $13 million for broadband.
Yep, no, I understand. Representative Carlson, I think, you know, from what's been discussed, that there would be a total of $20 million, including the $7 million this year that we just discussed with education and broadband. And then I know the only real sort of tales, so to speak, that I know of that has been discussed, and I haven't given any formal or informal tales targets to the committees, although that doesn't say that I, you know, won't be talking about that in the future, is an additional $15 million in tales for broadband in 2018.
Yeah,
so that would be a total of $35 million.
Mr. Chairman, I picked that up in your press release.
Good reading, Representative
Carlson. Where you pumped up your number a bit by going into the next biennium, but I don't want to debate the politics of that because broadband is important. But this particular budget resolution, however, puts a total of $20 million into broadband, then the 13 plus the 7.
For
what I understand is the instructions to the chairs on your side of the aisle. Tails become important because committees can sometimes have pretty good imaginations about how to solve some problems by moving things into the next biennium. And I'll only say that there's talent in that regard on both sides of the aisle.
I am aware of that.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to encourage a no vote, but I don't know if anybody else wants to make any comments or not. And one of the things that bothers me about the situation is that now we sit there with basically $900 million in conference committee between the transportation and the tax bill. I think the total that you went into conference committee was something like $1.4 billion, if I recall, or pretty close to that. So obviously there's going to be some changes with the new reality that it's $900 million. But one thing that I find troublesome, and you did comment that the leaders would need to work that out. And my concern is that that's going to come down to basically three people. And we have 201 legislators that right now we're into a second year of the biennium. Things have changed greatly, and you're going to have three people, the majority leader in the Senate, the Speaker of the House, and the governor, probably in the end making the decisions on that $900 million. And the last time that was done was in the Ventura administration, and if you may remember, the one-third, one-third, one-third was the way they resolved it, but the rest of the legislature didn't have much input at all, and that's the situation that we have before us. They may reach out a little bit beyond that to somebody like yourself, but it's going to narrow down to a relatively small group that will determine the big picture. And that I find under the current circumstances personally quite troubling. I recognize I'm in the minority, so probably wouldn't be in the room under any circumstance, but we are turning over the entire legislative process potentially to just those three. And I would hope that some people on your side of the aisle would have some of those same concerns. They may come back with two major bills that will impact on what the chairs on your side of the room and other members have put 2 years of work in, and they've had no voice in the end, or very little voice. So with that, a no vote, and then after we vote, I do have a question of process, if you would.
All right. Any other discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Knobloch?
Aye.
Albright?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Carlson?
No.
Cornish?
Aye.
Davids?
Yes.
Dean?
Yep.
Detmer?
Aye.
Draskowski?
Aye.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Gunther?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hamilton? Sorry. Hamilton?
Yes.
Kilstrom?
No.
Hornstein?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Loon?
Yes.
Mahoney?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Murphy?
No.
Norness?
Aye.
Pulaski?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Torkelson?
Aye.
Birdall?
Yes.
Wagenius?
No.
There being 17 ayes and 10 nays, the RES 06 resolution is adopted. And Representative Carlson, before I recognize you, I do want to say one thing in response to the concern you brought up. You know, I have had some concern about the, you know, the target setting process too, and I know I mentioned this on the floor a while back. We are trying to get a joint hearing of some kind put together with the Senate to bring in NNCSL for a meeting and learn about the ways that other states set targets and do their budget process, because I think that oftentimes we, you know, we get very focused on what we do and what our tradition has been, and there are 49 other states, and they all do things differently, and there might be some things we can learn from them so that we're not put in the kind of position that it seems like we're often put in, where the final targets get right down to being decided just you know, a very few days before the end of session, which creates a real rush. And so I you know, I'm interested in learning more about what other states are doing and seeing if there are some perhaps other alternatives to the way we're doing things. Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, I'm glad you brought that up. The report exists. It's upstairs. It was done in 2008 by the Government Operations Committee. We spent an entire interim on that report. There are a few members who are here. It addresses the very problem that you have brought up and several others. In fact, the reason why we are posting amendments 24 hours before a bill is taken up on the House floor is a result of that report, and there were other changes also. I would highly recommend, before you have people at some expense come in, I can send you the report. I have it right here. And the area dealing with both drop-dead deadlines for policy committee, fiscal committees, also for setting these fiscal deadlines, all of that's in there compared to the other 49 states, because we looked at it. And I want to bring up, while we're on process, before I start, I want to say that Representative Nornes has a huge heart. Unfortunately, his target is several sizes less than his heart. And the example I have, I brought up yesterday in higher ed. This session we heard 35 bills. 35. The number I had last night was $163,812,200 for those bills. We went into the evening often hearing these bills. People from my district came up and testified. So for $163,812,200, the target's zero for 35 bills. The time that was spent and the amount of effort that was spent for zero, I think, is really a disservice to the people and to the staff that spent that much time. There's no surprise in your targets to me. I think these targets probably were established well before this week. Mm-hmm. In fact, some of us were talking about them over the interim right up to this. So when you say process reform, I think if we know what the targets are and we're in the short session, they should almost be announced the first week. And then you work with what you have from that point forward. But if we're going to go through dozens of bills, hundreds of millions of dollars, and the result is zero, there is a flaw in the process. And it should be corrected. So should that cell phone. But that's another issue. So I would recommend you take a look at the GovOps report, which is bipartisan. You take a look at the comparisons for exactly what you raised today on fiscal targets and others. And that, and I would join you in doing more reform on this process so we avoid this.
Representative Pulaski, just a couple things. First of all, these targets were not decided at the beginning of session or anything like that. You know, I've had, and we've had in our talks, a lot of discussions about them, so it's not like they were preordained at the beginning of session or even during the interim. And Mr. Marks has given me some information that I have looked at over the interim and since this started on what other states have done. I guess I don't know if that has come from the report that you referenced or if it was just other information. I do recall hearing about that report and some of the reforms there. If we bring in CSL, and it's my understanding that since we pay dues to them, they would likely come without charge to us. And then I think it would be interesting to have a hearing on it anyway. But I will welcome reading that report as well, and I'd encourage you to send it to me because I am interested in seeing if there are some other ways we can reform the process.
Mr. Chair, we did bring in CSL. They spent the better part of 3 months here. They were at the end of the session. Then they spent the summer with us. We had public hearings over the summer. I was chairing government operations at the time. I opened it up to everybody in the House, not just the members of the committee. And we did produce a very thorough report with the help of NCSL so that we had the perspective of the other 49 states. There were some interesting options. For instance, limiting members to 5 bills during session, not 100, limiting members to the number of bills they can sign on to, not 500. Limiting, in fact, for this session that you would actually have a point where no more bills could be introduced. That's it. You only deal with what you have. No more bills introduced after that point. Now, I know if Representative Kahn woke up, she had some disagreement to that. But actually we can use some of her examples as reasons why we should have made those changes. And there are other things in that report we should take a very serious look at. For a legislature that only exists for 120 days, we are not a full-time legislature. And we do have limited resources. So I think the report covers a great deal. Granted, it was 2008, but I still think many of the things in that report are pertinent to what's happening here today.
Well, Representative Pawlowski, I'll look forward to reading the report. Some of the things you mentioned are a little bit more encompassing than I was thinking of covering just on this. I was thinking of focusing a little bit more on just the budget setting process. But I'm interested in reading the report if there was that much work done on it, and I do think that we should look at the process.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to give you one example. It's from 2014. I chaired higher ed. It was analogous to this year. We had, I think, 5 meetings. The Higher Education Finance and Policy Bill was 2 sentences in 1 number. And when we were done, the committee shut down. And I think if we have limited resources, it's time that we demonstrate to the public how we can deal in an expedited way with limited resources and focus on them and make it appropriate to the amount of time that we have during a session. And by the way, I should say that the revisor's office used the bill as an example, and when he explained it to his staff, he said, I knew Representative Pawlowski wanted to make it 1 sentence, but he just couldn't do it.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll chime in a little bit on this because I've had some conversations of late about our budget setting process, and, you know, I've been here for a few terms. And the first discussion I had on this was a comment by someone here in the hallways that about the partisan nature of the legislature. And it always has had a certain amount of partisan overtone. But I said, you know, I think one of the things that's driving the partisan nature of the legislature these days is our own House rules. And it centers much on the budget. When I first came into the legislature, any member could, when an appropriations bill went through, or a finance bill, we called them appropriations bills back then, you could propose an amendment. And yes, it was up to the majority often to vote that down, but if you argued your case, your amendment might go on. Now with the rules being so restrictive that the minority or a member of the majority, for that matter, can no longer really move an amendment on a finance bill, and then you're ending up with the partisan debate that's often far removed from the issue that was before us. And it was very rare that you had a motion to override the speaker. And so then you have all of that rhetoric, if you will, that goes on simply because members, majority and minority, no longer have a voice once the budget resolution is set.
unless, quite frankly, you're fortunate enough to be in a position like you are, Mr. Chairman, or like I was recently, where I can bring the budget resolution back to solve problems, or if there's a new initiative that has to be resolved one way or another. But the average member, once this resolution was passed today, really has no voice. There's $2 million on the bottom line. Well, what does that really mean? As we all know, there's the court case of people who were inappropriately incarcerated, and I think that's $1.7 million. And I think you're pretty well compelled to have to address that. So there really isn't even $2 million on the bottom line that could be used in other ways if you address that issue or if the committee does. But my only suggestion with that is maybe as part of that discussion, look at our own history. Look back to the way things operated at one time. And it does put a little bit more burden, if you will, on the majority. You don't have to rely on the speaker ruling an amendment out of order. The member gets an opportunity to have their issue voted upon. And that's the way we operated for many years when I first came in. And then both caucuses, over time, got more and more restrictive. Probably goes back to about mid-19 or about 1985 or thereabouts when we moved in the direction of, having a Ways and Means Committee was part of that, and then part of that was having the budget resolution and the rules that followed that made it very restrictive. But I would just hope that you would look back. NCSL is one thing, or the report that Representative Pawlowski references. I had discussions with him, and I looked at the report, but that's 2008, so it's been a while. He gave me a bit of a refresher just now with what some of the things were that were in that. But our own rules, the rule that we used here today, or the rule that was passed in 2011, which is also very restrictive, which would have been another alternative. I forget what the number of that one is, but that's the one where you can't spend more, but you can raise more. So if you had a $10 million bill and you wanted to raise $1 million, you could pass that amendment, but you couldn't spend the million. So that's kind of an interesting rule. But at any rate, what I did want to find out from you, and you and I had the discussion, but how you're going to proceed, because you said that there may be more than one fiscal bill or finance bill, and then ultimately one conference committee. So if you've got any thoughts you could share with the committee on that.
Sure, I'd be glad to. I don't have anything new from what I told you this morning, Representative Carlson, but there are a total of nine finance bills here. Certainly the bonding bill would be standing alone, going separately. As I think you and a lot of people know, in the even-numbered year, we have traditionally had, in the end, one supplemental bill. We have a supplemental conference committee, and we have one bill that encompasses not the tax bill, not the bonding bill, but and perhaps not the transportation bill, but traditionally the other bills in a one supplemental bill. We in the House, I think the Senate typically passes one supplemental bill. We in the House don't do that. We pass multiple bills. We have had some discussion this year about perhaps combining some of these remaining eight bills with each other, but there hasn't been a decision made on that yet.
Okay, we'd appreciate kind of knowing what road we're on then.
Sure, yeah, when we know something, I'll be glad to tell you. I mean, for example, I know the Senate has frequently combined the jobs, environment, and agriculture bill bills into one bill. You know, that might be an option here to just sort of streamline things in this short session, but we haven't made that decision yet.
And by the way, just a short comment going back to what I was saying earlier then.
Yes, sir.
Reminded me of something. Henry Savickle, some of you may know him of being involved with the sports facilities in recent years. He was minority leader, and he had a major amendment to the tax bill, and it didn't fit. It was poorly drafted, and the majority leader got up and asked that the speaker rule it out of order simply because of the drafting. It was pretty messy, just to put it that way. And Martin Sable was speaker, and he said to the majority leader, oh, give them a vote. But we don't have that kind of an attitude these days, and that's part of my point, you know, that any member should be able to get up and make their proposal is my point. But thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Murphy.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, then, as I understand it, the Transportation Committee, or the that's in conference, and the Tax Committee that's in conference gets the remainder of the money of the $900 million that wasn't in the bill that we just passed. So does that set a precedent then not to make a decision at the end of the first session on the appropriation bills or the tax bill or a specific topic bill so that there's a chance of ending up with more money in the future year?
Representative Murphy, I don't think so. I mean, actually, if we had passed those bills last year, we would have had more money available for them than now, given the changes in the budget forecast. And so I don't think there's any kind of a precedent set by that. And in any case, I don't think there would be any kind of precedent set.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy,
are they bound by the same target that they had at the end of May?
Well, Representative Murphy, those bills are, they've now passed the House and they're in conference, and so they don't have the same targets because they have passed the House. We're basically waiting for joint targets to be sent for those bills.
So they will have new targets set as of what the financial situation is today than what was the financial situation that they were given for their conference committee in May. Is
well,
that correct?
No, Representative Murphy, what I would say is I would anticipate that there will be hopefully soon joint targets set for each of those committees upon negotiation with Senate Majority Leader Box, Speaker Dowd, and perhaps the governor.
Thank you for that clarification.
You're welcome. Seeing no other discussion, the meeting is adjourned until this, the meeting is adjourned. The next meeting is this Monday morning at 10:15. Meeting adjourned.